call the meeting to order. The bill that we're dealing with today is House File 641, which came to us from Representative Wagenius's committee. So Representative Wagenius will go through the bill for us. The proposal is, of course, to hear this and I guess take any amendments and also then hold it over. We're going to hopefully on Wednesday we end up with one legacy bill. So we're going to hold it over so instead of passing this on, we hold it over for inclusion in the omnibus legacy bill. Okay, Representative Wagenius. 641, the Clean Water Act.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. This is a recommendation that has passed the Environment and Natural Resources and Agriculture Finance Committee for the clean water funding. So I am just going to begin by walking it through for you, and I would be glad to take questions. So we'll start with the Department of Agriculture, and that is will start on line 2.25, $350,000 each year are to accelerate monitoring for pesticides and pesticides degradants in surface and groundwaters that are in areas that are particularly vulnerable. On line 2.32, a little over $3 million each year to increase the monitoring and then evaluate trends in the concentration of nitrates in groundwaters, again, in areas that are vulnerable to degradation. On 3.32, $100,000 in the first year and the second year for transfer to the Clean Water Agriculture Best Management Practices Loan Account. 4.7, $1.5 million each year are for technical assistance. 4.19, a little over $1 million each year for research to protect water sources from agricultural-related contaminants. 4.31, $175,000 the first year and $175,000 the second year are for a research inventory database. 5.6, $1.5 million each year to the implement the Minnesota Agricultural Water Certification Program. And you will see later on in this bill, the language is in this bill for that program. There's very little language that goes along in this bill. However, by and large, this fund is funding this program. There's just very little in the omnibus bill. $110,000 each year or for a regional irrigation water quality specialist. Now we get to the Public Facilities Authority, 5.28. $9 million in the first year, $9 million in the second year, or for TMDL load grant management program. 533, $2 million the first year, $2 million the second year, or for small community wastewater treatment loans and grants. There is some language here that I would draw your attention to, and that is on starting about 6.9. That we're asking folks to give us potential criteria that can be used to evaluate the option to buy out properties if it's more cost effective than a proposed wastewater treatment system project. This has been debated before, but without any action, and this would just be potential criteria. Now we're down to the Pollution Control Agency, and this is on line 6.23, $7 million each year for the completion of 20% of the needed statewide assessments of surface water quality and trends, $500,000 each year or to monitor and assess unregulated contaminants. I go back up to the A and let you know that this keeps us on the 10-year cycle, which is we established and we are continuing. Back again to the 10-year cycle, and this is for watershed protection and restoration strategy. Again, the 10-year cycle, $10 million, $10 million, $10 million, in each of the years for the RAPS and the TMDL studies. I would draw your attention to line 7.18. Of this amount, $800,000 each year is for conducting interim assessments of impaired waters 5 years after the completion of the TMDL. I'm not sure that assessment is the best word to use, but basically we are asking the agency to tell us what actions have been taken in this watershed that are moving toward progress of cleaning up the waters under the TMDL. We have given the agencies ample dollars for tracking. Okay, now I'm down to 7.30, $1,250,000 each year for, this is for groundwater assessment. Earlier we did surface water assessment, and there is, I would draw your attention to 7.35, where we're asking the agency to reassess waters that had been assessed 10 to 15 years ago to see what the trend lines are. I am on line 8.9. This is for the continuing work in the improvements in the lower St. Louis River and Duluth Harbor, $750,000 each year. 8.16 are for Clean Water Partnership Program, and that is a program that has a small amount of money in the omnibus bill. This is an expansion of that for a program that was quite successful in the early 2000s, and the money has not been there to do it. This is for lake communities in particular. A lot of them have done studies of what needs to be done for their lakes, a lot of them are ready to go for doing some actual implementation. 8.29 are for TMDL research and database development. 8.23 are for a multi-agency water database. 9.4 is for additional money to work on the National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System and Stormwater TMDL implementation. This is continuing money. Now we are into grants to counties for subsurface sewage treatment systems. Much of this money was carried in Bowser before, but I've moved it all into one spot with because of the reporting. We were getting we're still having reporting problems, spending a lot of money and hard to see what results we're getting, and so I think this will help in accountability. I want to draw your attention to, of this amount, $750,000 each year is available for counties for grants to low-income landowners. Now we're on line 0.30, and this is $550,000 each year for water quality monitoring in watersheds with participants in the Agricultural Water Quality Certification Program. That's the one I mentioned before, but there's some money here also to monitor watersheds that Bowser may choose that are going to do more intensive work and cleanup. So this is about doing the baseline data to see how we're doing. A lot of accountability. I mean, that's important accountability. Now I'm on 10.5. This is... the PCA asked for money to do some work to get more to get people more involved in raising the standards or sharing good work that's being done in wastewater treatment systems. I'm sure everybody is aware that each wastewater system is going to be very different just depending on the water in that area. What we are doing here in addition to that is giving $145,000 each year for essentially, says transfer to the Board of Regents, et cetera, but it's to the Civil Engineering Department of the University of Minnesota, where they've done some outstanding research on wastewater treatment systems with money that we have allocated to them through the LCCMR process. There are professors there that are outstanding in their field, and I think having them work with PCA is a benefit, and PCA working with them is a benefit to both. We could go into that if you're interested. 10.27 is $100,000 each year for grants to the Red River Watershed Management Board for their river monitoring, river watch activities. And this is for students who've been doing good work. On 11.7, it's $50,000 in 1 year for providing technical assistance to local units of government to address the impacts of water quality from polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons. And you are probably familiar with the problems that local units of government are having with stormwater ponds that have become highly polluted with PAHs. Then $40,000 each year to the Clean Water Council on 11-13. Now we're into DNR. This is $2.5 million each year for stream flow monitoring. 11.30 million each year for the index lake index of biological integrity assessments. 11.33 is 135 each year for assessing mercury. This is a continuing program. And on line 12.5, we're going to the development of targeted science-based water restoration tools in cooperation with the PCA, that's on 1212. And 1222, it's for water supply planning from DNR. 1225 for technical assistance to support water quality, and you'll look online 12.29. It's in forested watersheds, and you'll see that in the next group two, it's again for forested areas, 675, the first and second year. Now on H, it is $615,000 each year for the developing of county geologic atlases. This county geological atlases, for those of you who don't know, and I'm talking about it now because we're allocating the equal amount for the University of Minnesota. An atlas is where the scientists figure out county by county where the water is, how big that cavity is or capacity is for water. We've done, I think, about 30% of the state. And we were on a very slow snail's pace schedule to get the rest of the state done. And what I am doing here is raising the amount of money so that we can get the rest of these atlases done, hopefully in about 10 years. That is the intention of that money. Atlases are just fundamental in understanding our groundwater. It does not get us to the point of understanding how the recharge levels, but that's the next layer of sophistication that we're going to have to work on. $85,000 the first year to develop design standards for public water access and to make sure use that for improving water quality by avoiding shoreline erosion and runoff, particularly runoff from parking lots. J1314 is groundwater management areas under current law. Groundwater management areas are something DNR has not done. They have not had the money to do that. We are in, I think it's fair to say, in crisis management in areas in our state where there are water conflicts. Groundwater management areas would allow us to be more fair and do some of that prevention, just as we work above ground in water basins and watersheds. This is the equivalent underground. Probably not the equivalent, but basically that's what that is. This is when you get to line 13. So that's what I was just talking about on 1314. On 1333, our grants to counties and other local units of government for doing adopting advanced shoreline rules. In 1419, that's all of that is what describes a all on page 14 is what describes an advanced shoreline rule. This is totally voluntary. Counties do not have to do this, but if they would like to, then they are given $100,000 each to do their own shoreline management. Let's see, now we get all the way down to, I'm going to draw your attention to 1520 and 1528. This is parallel language, $100,000 each year for DNR and part of it for DNR in consultation with Met Council to hold workshops around the state so that not just the folks who are technically involved in water can work on water issues, but you can invite the mayors and or their designees, because a lot of this is public policy work that we have not been thinking about, and so this is an educational process for, and I have gotten calls from mayors wanting us to do something like this. It surprised me no end. Okay, there is from Representative Falk on 1613 to evaluate water quality impacts of hard rock aggregate mining in the headwaters of the Minnesota. And now we're on to Bowser, which is in 1621. And this is a $5 million the first year, $5 million in the second year for watersheds or sub-watersheds that have multi-year plans that will result in significant reduction of water pollution in a selected watershed. These are competitive grants. Look at 1629. These are last for 4 years. There's a match of 25% required on line 1719. And one of the things that we have done that lots of testimony in our committee, not lots, but testimony in our committee and concern in our committee, I think that's a better way to put it, concern about pollinators in Minnesota. And, you know, the bee collapse is something many of you have heard about. So we're saying that prairie restorations conducted with funds awarded under this in Bowser, and actually there's another place too, must include a diversity of species, including species selected to provide habitat for pollinators throughout the growing season. So you'll see that language again. We'll also see some of that kind of language when we do the omnibus bill for DNR. Okay. Then there's money on line 1731 for riparian buffers. for practices, including riparian buffers, practices to store water on natural treatment, and infiltration, rain gardens, capturing stormwater. These are just for practices, including advanced practices that are known to be more, if you look at more protective, or most protective, and that's on line 18.5, most effective in protecting and enhancing and restoring groundwater in lakes, rivers, and streams. And, of course, protecting groundwater from degradation. $4 million each year for targeted local enhancement grants, $900,000 each year for oversight, and $1,700,000 for grants to local units of government. And then on 19.6, you'll see this is to buy, to purchase and restore permanent conservation easements. On line 19.28, wellhead protection under Minnesota statute site, which is common. We've done this regularly now. Let me get to some money for technical evaluation on 21 and 26 for the Area 2 for 2010 is for the Conservation Corps. And then we go to the Department of Health, and we start there on page 21.1, $1.3 million each year for addressing public health's concerns related to contaminants in drinking water for which there is no health-based standard. 21.11 is for protecting ground source water protection for ground for drinking water, and then $250,000 each year for cost share assistance to public and private well owners for the cost of sealing unused wells. This is something that we have been doing, and I suspect we'll be doing for quite a long time. $390,000 each year for the county well index. On 21.20, and then $325,000 each year for studying the occurrence and magnitude of contaminants in private wells and developing guidance along with the Commissioner of Agriculture for new well placement. There's money for 21.31 for Lake Superior. Pollutants that have closed the beach. I understand they would like more money for this, but we will have to chat later about that. This is what we had been presented to us. On line 22.3, there's $980,000 for biomonitoring program that's going to focus on children and disadvantaged communities with regard to drinking water quality management. And on line 22.10, this is to develop and implement a groundwater virus monitoring program. National studies say about 30% of our drinking water has viruses in it. Some obviously aren't hurting us, but some may be hurting us, and Minnesota does not have a program for that, for testing that out, and that's what this does. Okay, now we're at the Metropolitan Council. And there are three things here. First is grants on 22.23 for infiltration, inflow and infiltration grants. 22.30 is for an agreement with the USGS to look at White Bear Lake. I think we have seen White Bear Lake as a poster child of things that can go wrong, and so we can get some not only more information about White Bear Lake itself, but it should be giving us guidance for other areas. And if you look at lines 23-6, for other areas to use in addressing groundwater and surface water interaction issues. I think it's the last thing I'm going to mention to you is on line, in terms of dollars, is on line 23-11. And this is to the Metropolitan Council for Regional Groundwater Planning to supply reliability and sustainability. We had testimony in our committee on several occasions about the water use in the metropolitan area using aquifers, and we're using them at an unsustainable rate. So the question is, how do we, what should happen? This is not going to work. I think it hits particularly hard on a county like Dakota, but Washington County and all over, but some areas are hit harder than others. We have had absolutely scary, from my point of view, testimony from Met Council saying you'd best figure out where you're going here because what we're doing doesn't work right now. So with that, I think I told you about the University of Minnesota. I've told you about the water certification program, which is in here. And the last thing there is, I mentioned to you that there was $85,000 one time to have standards for best management practices for designing and constructing new public water access sites and renovating existing sites. So with that, Madam Chair, I have gone over the bill. I could give you summary statements or take questions as you wish.
Okay, are there any questions?
Madam Chair, just wondering what's going to be the format. I do have questions in regard to page 16, item N, an item that got included by amendment in Representative Wagenius's committee at some point. I think I would like to hear from some of the local folks in regards to this amendment. It has to deal with a hard rock moratorium in the Minnesota River Valley.
Okay, we will be taking testify, we will be taking public testimony in a few minutes. We do have Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a couple of questions for Representative Wagenius. On the PFA funding of $11 million each year, mm-hmm. is that... usually we try to get to the to what PFA can do.
Yeah.
Is that?
I believe that is this number.
Okay. I mean, I'm a big supporter of PFA funding, but giving them more than what they can do isn't usually very effective. Also, just Madam Chair, a question on the Pollution Control Agency.
Which page?
On line or page 6, 622, the beginning of the section there. Just a quick question. 20% of the statewide, of the needed statewide assessments, does that mean, what percent are we at now, I guess I'll ask?
We have been at 2, 4, 6. This would be 7 and 8 year, I believe, but we asked to stay here somewhere. Yes, that's correct.
What? Say what?
Seventh and eighth.
You might hit the microphone.
Okay. This would be for the seventh and eighth year.
Madam Chair, Representative Wagenius, what percent are we now? The assessment.
We will, with the money we already have, we will have done 60%, and this was for 70% and 80%.
Okay, thank you. That's what I was wondering. that's good. Thank you.
It's been brought to my attention that we haven't moved the bill. So Representative Wagenius moves House File 641 to incorporate
recommends pass and incorporate in the omnibus bill. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On page six, lines. Well, it's a section that talks about the criteria for buyouts. Could you talk about that a little bit more, Representative Wagenius?
Thank you. There have been discussions over the years that we are spending more on a wastewater treatment system than on the value of a home. I don't know whether that is true or not, but since there has been so much discussion about, and since our dollars are not, we don't have as many dollars as I think either of us would like to see, that is a potential thing to do. I mean, we buy out homes in floodplains, and we do that with one criteria. Are you going to flood again? This is another issue like that. It's just potential criteria, and it's to evaluate. It doesn't lock us into anything. I think what I would hope is it would bring up issues and give us some examples. That's what I would hope.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative
Wagenius, so who is this targeted at? What situations do you have in mind that this would be utilized in?
Well, where we have, and I've been to a community, and it's fortunate, when I was on a bonding tour, it's fortunate I can't remember the name of the community, where there were like four houses, and the old brick line sewer system was leaking all over the place. And I could have walked down to the lake maybe a little farther than that wall. It looked like the expense of creating a wastewater treatment system for those few houses was going to be very, very high. And there were lots of questions at that point. Were these houses valued substantially less than the wastewater treatment system that would be brought in and paid for by public dollars? This is not private dollars. This is paid for by public dollars.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Gaines, what would you see the role of local government in this process?
I don't see why not. I mean, I would think that they would be glad to be participating in doing this.
Thank you.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question for the author of the bill just regarding the Section 6.22, the Pollution Control Agency, the allocation of $30,315,000. I see just in that breakdown, it seems like there is a lot of monitoring and...
Just give me the number again. Okay. I think I didn't hear it correctly.
Yeah. It's page 6, 6.22.
Oh, okay.
And you probably walked through this already, so if the answer is something I didn't hear, my apologies. But it seems in reading the appropriations for each segment of this that there's a lot of monitoring happening and plans, and unless I'm wrong, it doesn't seem to be implementing any actual physical requirements for that section. So is that appropriation just for a lot of monitoring and studies and goals setting as I read through each one?
This is our current law. I believe it was Representative Dennis Osmond's law that we voted on maybe 2006 or something like this. Folks said, well, we don't know where to clean up unless we assess what reassess what's the problem here. So this is the what's the problem. And at that time, and I think it currently continues, is that we were finding problems in about 40% of the areas tested. So that is what we are doing. And as I talked with Representative Erdahl about, this would now be 60%. We funded 60%. This is getting, we'll finish 70 and 80% of that kind of testing.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. So that it is all just testing and monitoring, and goal setting and implementing, nothing out of that $30 million, no actual physical improvements for the improvement of the
of the $30
project.
Million? No,
yeah.
That's not the case. But as the $7 million, $7 million are for completion of 20% of the needed statewide assessments of water quality and trends. That's the information that we are basing our work of where we work on. I mean, you just don't go out and spend some money without knowing where you should go and having... That's what that work is about. So if you go on to the next page, then you are looking at a couple of different things. We were doing something called a TMDL, and this is to say, well, now we are in an area, we know this is impaired. We know it's impaired, and we know it's impaired for, I would say, old pollutants that we've known about since the 1970s. We know it's impaired. Well, where is that impairment coming from? So this is, well, why? If it's sediment, where's it coming from? So when you look at the, what's called the RAPS, that is new work that the Pollution Control Agency is doing, where they can actually pinpoint that this riverbank is shedding great pieces of chunks of something that are getting into the water. So they have gotten down to a very sophisticated level. So now we know, well, we know where the problem is, and we now have an indication of what we ought to do about it. So you can't solve a problem unless you can describe it. And so that's what this is all about, solving a problem. It's problem solving at its most basic level, but you have to be able to define the problem before you solve it.
Yeah, I see that now. Thank you, Representative.
Okay. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative McDonald, I have you look on page 8 and 8.9 to look at projects that are implementation. There's the $750K for water quality improvements in the St. Louis and the Duluth Harbor, and that will help bring us some federal dollars through the Great Lakes Water Quality Initiative. F is $3 million a year to the Clean Water Partnership. Those are for on-the-ground programs. Look on 9, get into 9.8, 3.4 million per year grants to counties to deal with SSTS where there's imminent public health, kind of describing that whole thing with septic systems. 9.3 is the certainty program,
which is on the ground,
and then got some more wastewater treatment in the subsequent ones, and then I think on 10.27 there's a 100k a year for watershed, Red River watershed for monitoring as well. So there are different segments in there, and I think particularly that Duluth one helps bring in some money that's there right now to deal with those an area of concern.
Okay. Representative Topolis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Wagenius, you just mentioned that the $3 million for the Ag Water Quality Certification Program would go on the ground. Can you describe how that would happen?
Well, it's bringing in the federal dollars at $6 million, which are all going to be on-the-ground dollars. And so it's a combination. We can't get the $6 million of federal money unless we have the $3 million of state money to set up the program.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let's just be clear. The $3 million of state money is not going on the ground, is it?
Some of it may be. Some of it may be. Certainly, as you are going out and working with farmers and technical assistance and helping them, I see that as on the ground. But maybe other people don't. It depends on how you define it.
In another area, Madam Chair, under DNR, we have a $7 million program to develop and designate groundwater management areas. Can you describe to me how this is going to clean up the water in Minnesota?
Groundwater okay, the statute provides right now for groundwater management areas. Now, I'm not sure that the question is just cleanup. Groundwater management areas are also about quantity, not just quality. So we have areas in this state, and I will go through a list of them, where there are conflicts because of water use, or where areas have really run out of water. Worthington is the kind of poster child for running out of water. We're going to, it's getting 25% of its water right now from Iowa. Had it been in a water management area, we may have been able to do problem solving sooner. Marshall is having to go 23 miles away to look for water. The reason I bring up those two particular areas, they're like a number of other areas in our state where we do a lot of food processing. Food processing takes a lot of water. We want those industries in Minnesota, and we want to make sure that they know that they have a continuous supply of water. I mean, we do have areas in the state where, okay, so Freeport, I mean, we've heard about it, Fremont, has had water problems. Obviously, White Bear Lake. Had we had water management areas before and DNR was looking at this is the amount of water we have, quantity-wise, that we may not have had the conflicts. Candy, Ohio is another area that comes to mind because they don't have an atlas, for one. And there are water conflicts there. Had there been a water management area there, perhaps we wouldn't be in the pickle we are in now, where people sink very expensive wells, and then they can't use those wells completely because there isn't enough water. I should have brought it today, but I got an email from editor of, and Representative Erdahl's going to have to help me, Andrew Borman, who is...
Andrew Borman of the Independent Review.
Of the Independent Review in Richfield. And he wrote an editorial about someone coming in and putting in a well, a big well, that was very close to the Litchfield City well. And there are huge questions about, is there going to be enough water for both? And DNR never looked at that ahead of time because that's not part of our protocol right now. But part of our protocol perhaps should have been before somebody spent a whole lot of money on a well to see if that well was going to interfere with the Litchfield City well. So that was what the editorial was about. I will make sure I get that around to members. And so the editor sent me an email this weekend, and I responded, and he was on the phone early this morning before I got in, and I got in pretty early, wanting to talk about what the state was going to do about problems like that.
Okay. I do have an amendment, the A11 amendment, which is, I don't know if you want to offer this or if I should. This is the one on the critical Mississippi River Corridor critical areas.
If you would offer it, Madam Chair, I would accept it.
Okay, okay. What this is part of the shoreline management. This was something that's in statute 16G.15. And unfortunately, there was a deadline as to when it had to be done, and we've passed that deadline. So we need to extend the deadline to do this, which is already in statute. And so we've cut down one appropriation and found the $100,000 to give us the $100,000 for the rulemaking under this statute. And so it's not doing anything new. It's just keeping an authority to make rules that would have expired to continue because of this. Any questions about that? Okay. All those in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. The A12 amendment, Representative Wiginius, would you like to order?
Yes.
Offer that one? That one's from the Clean Water Partnership Program.
Yeah, well, what this does is just, while it looks like a big delete and change, the money remains the same, but we're conforming the language in this bill with the language in the omnibus bill that is $400,000 each year for the same program. So this is just making the language identical. It would not be smart to have different language in each bill. And then there was a the other amendments are really cleanup amendments. They're not significant. They're technical.
Okay. Any questions about the A12 amendment? Okay. All those in favor of the A12 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Okay. We now have the There's one amendment that's Robert, do you want to offer the A13 now, or do you want us to have testimony first? I mean, this is kind of a major, whatever you want.
Well,
it's your amendment.
Hard rock testimony, is that what you're speaking of?
What?
Why don't we do that first?
Do that
for
first.
Those folks that have come some distance have a chance
okay.
to speak.
Thanks. Okay. We now have we had an issue that we had discussion of this in the Representative Wiginius's committee, which is the issue of hard rock mining in the city near the city of Ortonville. Where is it in the bill? Okay. Where is it? We're trying to find where it is in the bill. This is a section on page 16 in the bill. It's 16.3 and 16.18.
on the issue of hard rock aggregate mining in the headwaters of the Minnesota River. Okay, we have two people, and we'd like, right now we have Vicki Oakes, the Community Development Coordinator, and previous Big Stone County Planning Commission Chairman, and we also have the Mayor of Orton. Yes. Oh, okay. Come up there, sit there, and then before you say something, you say your name so that we have it on the tape.
And I do have handouts. Do I?
Okay. Yes. If we possibly can, we'd like to keep it to 5 minutes apiece. Will that work?
My name is Steve Berkner. I'm the current mayor of Ortonville, Minnesota. And to speak to you today on the hard rock mining amendment that Representative Falk had put forward. I'm also here with Vicki Oakes, who is our local EDA director, and also sat on the, she was the head of the planning commission, chair of the Big Stone County Planning Commission until just recently, and was involved in quite a bit of the work that went into the conditional use permit for the strata quarry that we feel is being targeted with this amendment. The information that we received on this first, that this amendment or this process was going forward, we received on Friday morning from, I believe it's the Association of Minnesota Counties. We're in contact with some of the county commissioners, the five county commissioners in Big Stone County, and immediately starting last Friday morning, quite a bit of a firestorm erupted that the county, which was being basically targeted for this amendment, wasn't included in much of the testimony, and it wasn't until we were able to review. Now I'm speaking on behalf of the county. There are three letters there from county commissioners, one that represents Big Stone County, the city of Ortonville, one that's the Ortonville Township, and Joe Burning, who resides in Ortonville, and he also used to be deputy sheriff and sheriff of Big Stone County. But there's responses from them. And some of their concerns, to backtrack here a little bit, is that we weren't necessarily included, the county wasn't included in much of that discussion. And by reviewing some of the audio tapes, it appeared that some of the information that was being used to forward this amendment was kind of based on some misinformation, maybe not all the facts. The county wanted to try to respond as quickly as they could, but with their responsibilities was not able to be here. And basically they have their comments in those letters. There's also a letter there from the Big Stone environmental officer, Darren Wilkie. He's been environmental officer in Big Stone County for 18 years. And he has some comments as well. And more or less what had happened is the process for this quarry started pretty much in 2006 and had slowly progressed until the last 2 years where the conditional use process basically started. And at that time, the county went through their public hearings, their testimony, and a lot of the research and stuff that they did to come up with a very thorough conditional use process. As that seemed to be getting closer to passing, the Ortonville Township and their board, which basically is representing about 14 homes that are located along Highway 775 right on the southeast corner of Ortonville that are adjacent to this area. Currently that area has two quarrying activities. One of them is by LG Everest, where they crush rock similar to how the strata quarry would go, and also Cold Spring Granite Company, which has an open quarry where they bring out blocks and that type of stuff. Once some of that resistance, or once the township picked up on that they were probably losing this battle, the public opinion was going against them, they immediately passed a moratorium on allowing any expanding of any of these type of operation in Ortonville Township. Strata and the owners of the, actually not Strata, I need to correct myself, they're the Hedge family, which owns the property, which is to be used potentially by Strata. They more or less saw the treatment they were getting in Big Stone County and sought out annexation to the city. And at that time, The city started the process of trying to get ready for the application for the conditional use permit. That conditional use permit is in place and is basically being scheduled for those meetings right now. And to get back to the frustration from the county commissioners and also from the city of Ortonville now and myself as mayor, all of a sudden we seem to be up against this amendment, which seems to be targeting the activity in our area. Did I skip over anything too fast or need to explain anything?
I don't think so. We do have this handout. Ms. Oakes,
please. There's another handout that was probably just, it's probably the loose piece that was just added. City of Ortonville, before I left town this morning, and by directive by a few other city council members, wanted to try to get together in an emergency session to pass a resolution. There's a loose piece of paper that was put forward there is from that resolution that passed 5-0 today that was asking for the immediate rescinding of this amendment. And if you can take the time to read that, and it's something that we actually threw together in Delano at the restaurant that had Wi-Fi about an hour before we actually got here. So hopefully that this will answer some of the questions there. And I do have Vicki Oakes here who probably could answer some questions as well.
Ms. Oakes, are there any other comments you'd like to make?
Well, what I mainly am here to comment on is the references at the last committee when listening to the audio. They talked of, there were many questions, is this a local issue? How come the county isn't taking care of it? And the county did go through, and you have my handout in there, the county did go through a very lengthy process. We held 3 public meetings at the Planning Commission level, and the county commissioners had not done that before, but they had their own public hearing and listened to more public input. And there was a couple of things I just wanted to highlight on there. You can look through the timeline. But the question of if the county did rule, they did. And they did issue a conditional use permit, and it was recorded with the Big Stone County Recorder's Office on May 17th, 2012. And another thing I wanted to highlight without reading my whole testimony, I wanted to note that although Representative Falk made mention that there were other mining companies in Big Stone County where wells were going dry because of mining through the hard rock areas, and further noted that those concerned were hoping to avoid some of the problems that they've experienced in the past. And I was available through the whole process, and I did not hear any testimony from anyone during this process that would have indicated that there were wells going dry in Big Stone County due to mining. And I thought that was an important fact to pull out when you're making decisions on these. It would be nice to know that we don't have mines making our wells go dry, and we're still wanting to move forward. The county went through a very long, thoughtful process. The public meetings allowed every opportunity to voice their concerns, and adjustments were made to this project. I believe Big Stone County did follow all of the appropriate requirements for a conditional use permit. And I do want on record to show that Big Stone County did rule on the permit as to the questions from the last committee, and that they ruled that they found this project would not be injurious to the use and enjoyment of other property in the vicinity. I want to thank you for hearing us today, but I did want you to be aware of some of the facts from the public hearings that were extensive, and you can see from the timeline, took a long time to go through. Thank you. That's all I had to say. Everything else is noted.
Thank you. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Mayor, and Ms. Oakes, is it?
Yes.
Just a couple of questions here. First, I have the a letter from Commissioner Olson saying that you've had your conditional use permit issued, and they list a lot of testimony and in work in reaching this determination. My question is, as you referenced science, what type of expert evaluation went into this?
Well, this actually, if you note on the timeline, there was an EAW that was completed in 2011. That'd be the second item. And it was found that an EIS was not needed for this project, and there was no opposition within 30 days after. As far as the, and that was quite a lengthy document, of which has been posted online since the county had that for people to review. As far as additional testimony, I believe there's someone here that can go into in-depth testimony on the wells and the wetlands there. But it's all very well documented throughout the county, and the city actually posted every document throughout the county process online for people to be able to review all of the information as far as the expert testimony, diagrams. Everything submitted into record is online on the Ortonville website for people to review.
Hey, Madam Chair, I'll continue. Mr. Mayor, Ms. Oaks, and you know, perhaps Representative Wagenius, can someone give me an answer as to what more you expect could be gained by an evaluation of water quality impacts by the commissioner? What more can be gained from what you have done?
I do not know what more could be gained from what we have done.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. Representative Erdahl, you are going in the direction I was going to ask. If I don't know, this is, has a county geologic atlas been done for Big Stone County?
Okay. That could probably be answered. I believe is Jason Kerwin going to be speaking? He can answer to the technicalities of those things.
There are three more people who have asked to speak.
Okay, then I'll ask Wade on that.
And so,
during this vetting process of the CUP with the county, Minnesota the DNR was involved, Big Stone National Wildlife was involved. All of them were involved in those discussions, and all of them also passed on the request for the environmental impact statement. There again, that's kind of a moot point in that area. The city of Big Stone, the city of Ortonville, is basically just getting ready to go through the same process, and basically has posted all of the county information to try to be as thorough as we possibly can. And we look forward to moving forward on that.
Just real quick, Madam Chair.
Yeah, Representative Erdahl.
Does Big Stone, South Dakota, are they doing any of this as well?
Well, it's funny because where I live in Ortonville, Minnesota, we're within 3 miles of two states and four counties, two South Dakota counties, two Minnesota counties. We basically have an economic area. It's not in our high school, Ortonville High School, South Dakota kids starting in eighth grade, ninth grade, they just come here. For those types of things. So the area has an economic infrastructure. Big Stone 2, the Otterdale, or Big Stone 1, Otterdale Power Company power plant, the Poet ethanol plant. There's probably six or seven quarries on the South Dakota side of the Minnesota River. And then there's two quarry activities and just countless gravel activities. I mean, Big Stone County and Grant and Roberts County of South Dakota, Lac La Parle County in Minnesota, we're just blessed with and that paper gets shipped literally all over the Midwest, and our granite products literally get shipped all over the world. In fact, two of the columns, I believe, in the state capitol came from one of the quarries in the Ortonville area that came out of the ground back in the 1900s. So, I mean, it's been part of our industry, our local infrastructure and economy forever.
Just to be clear, Madam Chair, what I want to know is, is this progressing at a faster rate in South Dakota than it is in Minnesota?
The aggregate crushing is not that prominent in South Dakota. They're mostly into taking out the blocks of granite. There's numerous, they're doing a lot of the facing granite for floor tile and that sort of stuff. But the actual rock crushing, a majority of that is happening in Big Stone County only.
Okay. Representative
McNamara.
We do have three more people who want to testify on this.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe my question is probably for Representative Wagenius. Representative Wagenius, this calls for an evaluation of the water quality impacts. Would some of the things we would study with this, assuming that the locals haven't done an adequate job of this, would that be like the size of the well that this mine would have for their operation or the treatment of their wash aggregate, like which flocculants they would use in the washing process, or where are they going to discharge their water to, which rivers? Would it go into Big Stone Lake, or would it go into Minnesota River, and what would be the rate of discharge? Are these some of the things that we're going to study in this evaluation?
Representative Wagenius.
That would be for the commissioner of the DNR. And what I don't know, yet I didn't ask it because I knew or didn't know, whether this county has a geologic atlas, which would give us a lot of base of information. And when I understand that we have an ethanol plant not nearby and countless gravel pits, you are looking for a change in hydrology here and what that would do to neighbors' wells. But beyond that, without that science before us, and it's not before us, I can't answer your question, Representative McNamara.
Could I make one comment to that?
Ms. Oates.
In your handouts, there is from the Big Stone County Environmental Office. And one thing to note with the, you know, as far as the permitting, and I believe when I listened to the audio before, they had called up the DNR to go through, you know, what further they could study. And Darren addresses that in the last paragraph. He says, as to your question regarding the county's review during the 2011-2002 conditional use permit application of strata, the process provided in-depth discussion, oral and written testimony from experts, and followed all appropriate process. Input from DNR hydrologists was sought to ensure this land use would likely not impact groundwater supplies of neighboring and residential wells. The Planning Commission and County Board fully understood the DNR waters and analyzes water supply for proposed land use. The board took it one step further and required monitoring wells data submission to the DNR hydrologist, and in addition, the condition required strata to be fully responsible to mitigate any unforeseen water supply issues as is required by current state statute. I would welcome the opportunity. Our mayor had asked him questions when he had heard the testimony that wells were being dewatered by mining. He contacted Darren, and Darren provided him with this response today.
Okay, I can thank you very much. I can move to the next three people. I don't know if we're coming up together or Bill LaFon, Jason Kerwin, and Jim Aiken. Wow, they're coming up. Representative Murphy, do you have a question of these people? Or
yes, I do.
Okay.
Madam Chair, Ms. Oakes, Mayor, how many permits are pending?
Well, and actually they can, Darren could be here. There are permits. We have the conditional use permit started as far as the process with the city. This other has been approved, but the others can't actually get started until this is finalized. And although we have a conditional use permit that's on file, the area that the conditional use permit, some of it is still within the township and on a moratorium, and they have not been allowed to move forward on these other permits, but they are all required before any mining could, that's all part of the conditions of the conditional use permit. But to my knowledge, they have not been allowed to move forward.
And Madam Chair, how many all are there that have been waiting? How many permits were you planning on issuing between now, or the time that this bill passes, and February 15th, 2014?
I will let them speak to the permitting process that's beyond ours. They had to continue with the environmental office on the additional, I might not have handed that in my sheet, but there is a list of permits, but first the conditional use permit has to be in place before they can move forward with some of those other permits. And they can answer to that how many permits they have applied to.
Because, Madam Chair, as I read the language, permits that are already granted can go forward. Then it's the new ones that would be
the City of Waterville's permitting CUP process has just started. It's officially begun
it's just not resolved. We haven't gone through the whole 60-day process, but that process has begun. That's why this type of moratorium kind of puts us in a gray area. What are we responding to if something like this passes? Do we just go forward because it'll be grandfathered in because the process has already started? What I can guarantee, and I've been on planning and zoning for 10 years, is that our board has been preparing for the CUP process once it begins, and basically going to adopt everything the county has found in all of the stipulations in the county CUP, and that the cities would follow the same one and use the same vetting process, the same types of meetings that went forward with that. But nothing is being rushed through, everything is being taken at a convenient pace for both strata, the hedge, the family owner that owns the property in the city of Ortonville.
Madam Chair, Mayor, what about the townships?
This area for the aggregate mining itself is now within the city limits of Ortonville. That's 120 acres where this 95% of this will take place in probably the next 60, 70 years. It's all within the city of Ortonville.
And Madam Chair, Mayor Wilk, you don't anticipate that there would be anyone asking for a permit outside of Ortonville?
Vicki is here to answer for the work that the county has done so far. They already completed, or on the basis of just about completing. I'm here to ask, you know, for rescinding of this amendment to respect our process that's already started within the city of Ortonville.
Yes, you said that all the townships are within the city limits. Are these new annexations, or are they old ones that have always been there?
No, this is a new annexation process that began in December, I believe, October.
So if I could ask again,
Representative Virginia.
So the annexation process, and annexing then would say then to the township, you could no longer have a moratorium if you would like.
I guess effectively you could say that.
Yeah.
So the annexation process could be used to stifle the residents and the townships.
We can get to the fact. Okay. Thank you. I think we do need to move on a little bit. There's no amendment before us specifically with this item, but let's hear for the next three. Thank you very much. It's here. Bill LaFon, Jason Kerwin, and Jim Aiken. I don't know how. Representative Torkelson.
Well, while we're switching testifiers, it's unclear to me whose legislative district this project is in. Do you know, Madam Chair?
No, Representative Falk was the person who brought it to us, and I noticed that he's here.
Thank you, Madam Chair, but I understand it's probably in Representative McNamer's district. Is that, do we know that?
With redistricting, I think that's likely to be true.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Would you tell us who you are and proceed the way you would like to?
My name is Bill LaFon. Last Thursday's Environmental Natural Resource and Ag Finance Committee hearing, there were extended discussions on Amendment A6 to House File 641, which addressed the subject of the moratorium on a new mining and to fund the study of potential water impacts caused by hard rock mining in the headwaters of the Minnesota River. Some of those discussions by committee members asked the question, will this amendment impact any projects currently in progress? Other comments were along the lines, without the public's knowledge of this amendment, I fear that someone could wake up in the morning to learn that their project had just gotten axed. Well, I'm here to tell you, I'm that guy. I woke up last Friday morning to a phone call informing me that a new anti-mining amendment had just advanced in the House committee, and the amendment was specifically targeted to stop our project. My name is Bill LaFon, and I'm the business development manager for Strata Corporation. Over 6 years ago, I started work to develop a new granite quarry operation just outside of Ortonville, Minnesota. This mining project is called the Big Stone Quarry. It is located about 2 miles southeast of downtown Ortonville. It's on private land, currently a livestock pasture and feedlot operation. The total size of the site is about 478 acres, but the actual quarry site is much smaller, occupying only about a fifth of the overall site. After the quarry becomes operational, livestock grazing will continue on the remainder of the site. There are several historic granite quarries and gravel pits also on this site. There are two very active quarry mining operations immediately on the east side of this site. The first is Cold Springs Granite Quarry, which actually borders our site, and just on the other side of Cold Spring Granite's quarry is the LG Everest Quarry. These two quarries produce about 400,000 tons of granite per year and ship most of their products out by conventional truck methods. The Big Stone Quarry, which we have designed, it will ship almost all of our products on the adjacent railroad, thereby saving wear and tear on the local roads and highways. There are dozens of historic granite quarries in Ortonville Township and in Big Stone County dating back all the way to the 1800s. These granite quarries also extend across the border into South Dakota. Back in 1892, granite from the Baxter Quarry was used in the construction of City Hall and the Hennepin County Courthouse here in Minneapolis. In fact, four large columns of granite from the Baxter Quarry also occupy prominent positions right here in the State Capitol building. Our project, the new Big Stone Quarry, is actually an extension of this historic Baxter Quarry. They're located right next to one another. You can throw a rock from one to the other. They're in the exact same body of bedrock. In over 124 years of documented hard rock mining activity in Big Stone County and on our site, there has never been a single reported incident of hard rock mining activity impacting anyone's water wells, water supply, water quality, or the public waters of the nearby Big Stone Lake or Minnesota River. Although widely known to local residents, this fact was confirmed today with the Big Stone County Environmental Office, who has never received a single complaint or inquiry regarding any mining-related water problems. For over 6 years, we've been working on this project, and in the last 2 years, spent working directly with local government units in the final permitting stages. We had planned to be ready to begin construction late this summer. Should this amendment become law, the Big Stone Quarry will be directly impacted and unduly delayed at least another year, possibly much longer. Our project does not propose to use any groundwater, nor does it propose to drill any water wells, nor is it expected to have any interference or negative impact on any groundwater, wells, or aquifers. And I would add, we are not discharging any water either. Instead, we propose to seek a surface water appropriation permit from the DNR to allow us to withdraw seasonal water from the nearby Minnesota River. Additionally, we have a contingency plan to obtain water from the city in the event water from the river is not available. Although few people realize it, every living person in the state of Minnesota consumes the equivalent of 21,000 pounds or 10 and a half tons of aggregate per year per person. That's just the supply, the amount of aggregates needed annually to maintain and construct our roads, to develop our infrastructure, and to build our homes and buildings. Without the availability of quality and affordable aggregate, our homes and infrastructure will crumble. Aggregate mining also contributes significantly to the state's economy and employs over 10,000 people in the state of Minnesota. Our project, the Big Stone Quarry, has been under design, study, and development for nearly 6.5 years now. We have worked very closely with state and local regulatory agencies, including the DNR. And these agencies have played a critically important role in helping us design a mining project that didn't harm the environment, but one that could actually benefit the environment. I'd like to leave you with three key facts that may be critical in your deliberations on this amendment. First and foremost, the amendment before you would, without question, have a devastating impact on our project that is in the middle of a lengthy permitting process. We have spent well over $1 million to date. In 6 years of work, including approximately $500,000 surveying and studying all the surface and subsurface groundwater features on and off our site. All of this was done in a sincere effort to ensure that our project has no harmful impacts to any water wells or other water features. We have done everything possible to protect the environment, including all the local water features. Secondly, water wells and water supplies are already granted substantial protection by existing state statute and administrative rules. But as an additional protective measure, we agreed with the Big Stone County to write in a special rule in the conditional use permit that they granted to us, containing very specific provisions offering even more protections to local homeowners and water supplies from any adverse impact. And finally, I cannot understand what the proposed $25,000 study by the DNR could possibly accomplish that isn't already known. We've already spent $500,000 on that exact same issue. Also be aware that our studies were done in complete cooperation with and under the guidance of the DNR. And all of our results were shared with the DNR at no cost to the state. I'm afraid there are other purposes for this amendment that have little, if anything, to do with water quality or water supply issues. But with that, I'd like to sincerely thank you for the opportunity to bring these facts to your attention. And with Madam Chairwoman's permission, I'd like to turn it over to two independent scientific experts to comment on the technicalities of this issue.
Okay. State your name.
Excuse me, is there any questions I could answer?
Any questions?
Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
My name is Jason Kerwin. I'm an environmental consultant. I have 23 years experience, and I've been working on the Big Stone Quarry since it began in 2007. Tonight, I'm just going to briefly summarize the environmental review process. I'm hoping to get you guys to ask me some questions, and I can speak if you like. But I'm going to review the environmental review process, and then I'm going to go through some key points that were probably overlooked or you may not be aware of. So first of all, as part of this project, we did a hydrogeologic assessment in February 2010. That identified that the granite...
I know it's complicated, but if we could ask you to, we do have material in front of, keep it to 5 minutes, we'd really appreciate it.
I was shooting for three.
Oh, great. Okay, sorry. I took two to interrupt you.
This gentleman should get my other 2 minutes.
Okay.
Okay. So we did a hydrology assessment in February 8th of 2010. That assessment identified the granite in this area is a non-aquifer, and that's identified by the United States Geologic Survey. There were no bedrock wells in the area, and the granite in this area is high quality and unfractured. We also did a monitoring plan, Bill alluded to it, and that was actually something that I negotiated with the DNR and Bowser just to put any questions to rest, that we're actually going to monitor whether this quarry will, in fact, impact groundwater. Something that I don't think anyone's ever done. We offered it, we're paying for it. It's something to prove to everyone that we're not going to have a problem. If there is, we'll have to fix it. We submitted, both the hydrology assessment and the monitoring plan were essentially approved in what we call a favorable finding of fact by the following agencies: the Board of Soil and Water Resources, the Minnesota DNR, and Big Stone County. That, after we received that favorable finding of fact for those two studies, then we completed the EAW. We didn't want to do the EAW without that information. We submitted the EAW on December 20th, 2010. It included the above assessments, as I mentioned. There were five comments on the EAW. Those were from MPCA, DNR, Bill LaFond, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and Sean May. No one commented about well interference on the AW. So it was really a moot point at that time. Conclusion, Big Stone County stated that the proposed Big Stone Quarry is similar to existing operations, and the environmental effects are likely to not be significant, and that's documented in the finding of fact dated February 15, 2011. Some key facts I'd like to share. I handed out some handouts. One is with regards to water appropriation. Bill alluded to this. We are not pulling water out of the ground for use of the quarry. We want to pull our water out of the Whetstone Diversion Channel. And I was made brought to my attention recently that that's actually supported in state law. They want us, there's a priority to use surface water during peak flows, and that's actually what we're proposing. And I passed out some of that language to you folks. So we're not pulling water out of the ground. We're actually pulling it out of the diversion channel. And the vast majority of the water that we'll use will come about right now when the Whetstone Diversion Channel / Minnesota River is at its highest. So we possibly could be doing some people a favor, even though we'd only be pulling out about 0.01% of the available flow. So it's very minuscule. But we are pulling some water out, there's no doubt. One other thing, there's already a Minnesota rule, 6115.0730, with regards to well interference claims for people needing an appropriation permit. I'd like to discuss that with you if you'd like. We do need a permit. We need a DNR waters appropriation permit, and I'd like to have it in a few months. If you ask me that question, I'll talk about it later. But there is a well interference rules, and they, for anyone with an appropriation permit, those rules are in place that if the DNR says, if someone complains that their well is impacted, the DNR investigates. If the DNR says, yep, Jason, you impacted their well, then we have to remedy the problem. It's already in state law. Lastly, in the Big Stone County conditional use permit people have discussed, we actually took that one step further. And in the monitoring plan that we have to pay for, and we install the wells, we do the I do the sampling, we have to provide all that data to the DNR hydrologist on a quarterly basis. So if there was an impact by this quarry, we would know it well in advance, give us plenty of time to resolve the situation. In conclusion, I just want to state that the proposed study and the amendment has already been completed. It's been completed without state dollars. It's been completed with complete cooperation with all the state agencies. They've commented on it. They know about it. And I'd love to answer any questions you may have.
Other questions? Okay. Oh, Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have questions for Mr. Kerwin. Mr. Kerwin, I just want to reiterate, did you say that you will not be taking groundwater for this mining facility? You'll be using surface water?
That's correct.
And thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Kerwin, did I hear you right that you actually will fill up your settling ponds in times of high water that will actually aid the flooding of the Minnesota River?
Yes. We will be pulling water out, right? It'd actually be, we were talking about this today. If we had a permit, we would be filling the ponds today, which is when the Whetstone Diversion Channel is at its peak flow. But essentially, it's prior to the construction season. What? We need water before we can wash rock. And that's all dictated by the construction season, so it's timed nicely with peak flow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Kerwin, you'll have, do you call them, I'm using the word wrong, they're not settling ponds, is that what you call them?
Wash ponds.
Okay, Madam Chair, Mr. Kerwin, so the wash ponds, today in most gravel operations, unfortunately, the wash ponds are not lined. Will these wash ponds have an impervious liner, preferably rubber, not clay?
Yes, Madam Chair, they will have a synthetic liner.
Thank you, Mr. Kerwin. And were all these things taken in? And I have one more question, Madam Chair, Mr. Kerwin. What flocculants will be used to settle out the dirt in the water when you wash the granite?
None will be used.
Madam Chair, Mr. Kerwin, why would you not use flocculants? We use flocculants in our area to wash the gravel.
Because we are washing granite, not limestone or river rock. This is significantly different.
Thank you.
Intrusive igneous rock.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Kerwin. Mr. Kerwin, did the locals take into account any of the things you just all said in their granting of this facility's permits?
I can only assume, Madam Chair, that they did. They know much more about hard rock mining than I do. So whenever we go to the Ortonville area, I learn something every day because they're very familiar with the process.
Thank you.
Well,
Representative Falk is here. Since it was his amendment, it might be appropriate for him to say some words on it if he so chooses. Let's also.
In the meanwhile.
Let's have the last person. Okay. And then, okay. Yes? Would you please state your name and.
Yes, Madam Chair, esteemed members of the committee. My name is Jim Aiken. I'm a hydrogeologist with a company called Barr Engineering here in Minneapolis. I was asked to provide an independent review on the project. I was not involved with the proposer's environmental assessment worksheet. I've come to know the project through the data that I've been reviewing, as well as, I must say, I'm a big fan of this committee and its work. The good news is that the geologic information that's out there is useful, and I know there's some other folks here that are part of the economic engine in the state that use that information and rely on it to help our clients solve problems. And I guess to make a long story short, it is disconcerting to see the funds of this committee directed towards projects that could be better served collecting basic science, when there's already information available that we can draw conclusions on as geologists and hydrogeologists that are already part of the state's database. So part of that information is what I want to share with you today. But I did talk with Representative Falk before the hearing, and I tried to understand some of those, some of the concerns of the constituents. And as I understand it, it is primarily regarding groundwater supply and the impact of the mining on their wells. I do not know specifically what wells are being referenced or the particular persons involved, but I did look up some of the available information in the County Well Index that's available through the state. Also consulted the County Hydrogeologic Atlas that's available. I also have worked as a geologist in several areas near the Minnesota Whetstone Rivers, studying the geology. We've done some groundwater modeling in the area. We've also looked extensively for water supplies in the area, and I can tell you that it's there is no extensive groundwater aquifers, because this part of the country, this part of the state, I should say, is where the core of the continent is exposed. The bedrock, basement rock, we call it as geologists, is exposed. I've provided a written testimony that'll cover a lot of the geologic detail that I'm just going to skim over in this testimony right now. But basically, the reason that that rock is exposed at the surface and that the mining is so attractive in this area is because there's a lack of overburden above it. And in geology terms, we don't like to call overburden just dirt rock. A lot of that overburden is just consists of the soft rock that normally in other parts of the state we would consider our aquifers. But in this part of the state, a lot of that aquifer material has been thoroughly removed by virtue of glacial meltwater that was released from Glacial Lake Agassiz in a series of events starting or ending about 9,000 years ago. So what happened was that water came through this area in the Big Stone County that we're talking about and scoured away a lot of that aquifer material that we have in the rest of the state and left remnant glacial. As those waters receded, the bedrock was exposed, and that bedrock material, I could just, there's a figure that speaks to this as well. But that bedrock material consists of granite, and granite bedrock is not permeable in the sense that it has no pores. It's crystalline. So for those who are familiar with granite countertops or Cambria-like silica countertops, when you spill water on that countertop, the water doesn't soak in. It runs off on the floor. If you're like me, the kids spill it on, it's all over the floor, and the dogs are slipping on it. It's a mess. But the bottom line is that granite doesn't soak up water. It's not a usable aquifer. There are slight fractures in it. If any of you get the chance, the facing of this building is actually constructed of granite. And you can go out and see in that granite the crystalline materials, and you can see these planes, very faint lines that constitute the fractures in that granite. And you can try to imagine to yourself, how in the world is water of any quantity going to be transmitted by those very, very microscopic, almost thin fractures? And the answer is not much. And the proof is in the pudding, in actuality, because the Bedrock County Well Index that's included some of the local wells in the area, a lot of the wells you'll see are what's called glacial drift wells. They typically are screened in higher up above the mine area, up in the landscape. They're limited in extent. They're not composed of the Jordan Aquifer. This aquifer isn't that we use in the Twin Cities there in Basin and the glacial extensive glacial aquifers don't exist here. And what we have is these small, very thin, disconnected aquifers that are separated and essentially sitting in pockets of this granite. They're not connected to the lower part of the valley where the river is. And that could be seen on the cross section that I've provided right here. And if you're going to imagine this cross section, this is a two-dimensional view, a slice through the valley, approximately oriented towards the northeast and the southwest. And you can get a sense for how these gray materials up here are perched on top of this blue granitic material, which is very hard, has no pores, very little permeability. You can get a sense for how some of these wells, where they are not on the city water supply, are collecting water from these relatively thin sand and gravel aquifers. They receive most of the water through rainwater and infiltration, not from the actual river valley. So the quarry itself is in the granite. It's not connected to these aquifers in the sense that if I were to put a quarry here, it would act as a sump and drain all those aquifers. So what it is it's collecting a little bit of water, primarily from floodwaters from the river, perhaps a lot of rainwater falling into the quarry pit, and some from cracks, particularly near the surface of the granite where it's actually weathered, so there's a material called saprolite. But the bottom line is, in general, the quarry itself doesn't have any dewatering and has no need. There's really not much water to get out of the rock. It doesn't have any discharge to the river. So if there are concerns with the quarry, and there are oftentimes we'll hear in the permitting process that's required through the DNR as part of this quarry, we'll hear about residents talk about their well goes dry, and every time there's these quarries and it's dry out, my well goes dry. And what the DNR actually asks us to do when we do these permitting is they ask us to identify all the wells in the area, and this is part of what is coming for this project. They ask you to identify all the wells in the area and do an assessment of those well logs that are available in the county well.
You know, I think we understand the permitting process. The problem we have before us is this item is in the bill. We don't have an amendment before us at this point, and so forth. As I sense from other members of the committee, I'm somewhat uncomfortable with it. I'm uncomfortable with the issue of whether it is a clean water, whether there are any clean water issues involved in this. I tend to kind of agree with the points that been made that a $25,000 appropriation to DNR isn't going to do a lot to resolve this. I think we do need a continuing discussion. If Representative Falk is here, I'd like him to say something about it. I would also at some point like to hear from Representative McNamer. Representative Wagenius, this is your bill. What do you have to say about it? So.
It's just my one piece of curiosity right now because we're getting a
Speak. Use your microphone.
Okay. How the geology of this state is different all over the place. Here comes this is another lesson in that. But what I understood from the testimony was that there's not much groundwater, but that this will, when it cannot get water from the river, will go on the Ortonville well. So my question, if there's not much groundwater here, why does the Ortonville system have substantially excess water? That's what I can't get.
appropriate, I would probably answer that question.
Would you please tell us who you are?
Steve Berkner, Mayor of Ortonville.
Okay.
The city of Ortonville has a capacity. Our water treatment plant can produce 1 million gallons of water a day. Presently, the city of Ortonville uses about 300,000 gallons of water a day. We presently have a three-year agreement left with the city of Big Stone, South Dakota, excuse me, where they buy about 300,000 gallons of water a day from us. So we have overcapacity beyond this right now, about 300,000 gallons.
Okay. Representative Wagenius?
That was not my question.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay.
My question was not in whether you have the capacity in your treatment system. It's the capacity in the aquifer when we just heard testimony that there's not much water except in these very shallow aquifers. So that was my question. And we've had problems in this state before, and I would just mention the ethanol plant in Granite Falls where we're switching back and forth between the river and the aquifer because it was permitted without thinking about the water enough first.
Yes.
Representative Wagenius, Madam Chair, if I could address that.
Okay.
I believe that the...
Again, state your name.
Again, this is Jim Aiken from Barr Engineering. I believe that the water in question is coming from an aquifer that's not present in this area of the project. It's a deeper aquifer that...
I think it's part of the Bevlin aquifer. And our wells are about 300 feet deep, and they're actually below the pouring depth. They're actually below the natural depth of where the quarry is, and it's also about 2 miles northwest of where the quarry will be located.
So to clarify, Jim Aiken again, just to clarify, this is an aquifer that's located with not underneath the basement rock, the bedrock aquifer. It's aquifer that's perched again on top of the bedrock, distant from this particular site.
Okay. I think we'd like to hear from Representative Falk, and then Representative McNamara is going to tell us.
Madam Chair, I just want to clarify, Mr. Aiken, you're using surface water, or you're probably not the right one to ask, maybe Mr. LaFond is, but you're using surface water for this mining operation, and the surface water will be, I'm assuming, either pumped or gravity fed into the settling ponds, which are lined, and the only water you're going to use is the evaporation. And does anybody know how many millions of gallons a year are you going to have evaporate or use in the operation? This is not using well water for this operation, correct?
That's correct. And the question from Representative Wagenius, pardon me for interrupting you. I just wanted to clarify that the question from Representative Wagenius was, what are the residents, what water is the city using and what the residents are using, not the project?
Yeah. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. I thought I heard in testimony that there would be the most used or use from both the Minnesota River overflow, whatever you call it, and using the city of Ortonville water. And if that is incorrect, then I stand corrected. But I thought that is what I heard.
Okay. I would like to hear from Representative Falk, and then if we need further information, we'll get it. Representative Falk.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I know it's not often that another committee or a member from a not serving on a committee comes and speaks before one, but just to give a little context, this is one of the things where I have had numerous township folk who had, I think, been doing the right thing with enacting the moratorium and allowing the study to go forward so they could actually figure out what the impacts would be to most closely affected them. I think those people feel very upset that property was annexed, and granted, I don't know if this was stated before, but there was six parcels attempted to be annexed. A judge overturned five of those annexations, found them to be illegal annexations. Now, the part about water usage here is not the usage of the mine, but it's all of these people's wells that are in close proximity, the homeowners of it, because as they have indicated to me, and granted, I can't speak on behalf of them whether or not they said this at a public meeting, but what they have told me personally is that some of the wells that they have, it's difficult because you're trying to put a well in an area we have a lot of bedrock. And so when you have to go out and dig multiple wells, you don't know what the potential impact could be as you start to mine through that bedrock. And we have heard here that these are shallow aquifers. And so the concern isn't the usage of the water or groundwater, so to say, by the mine, but it's what impact it will have on the neighbors who are directly adjacent to this, and whether or not that, you know, if you dig down far enough, that you'd get a dewatering of a well because the water flows into the mine instead. That's what's been relayed to me, and that's one of the things that I think that we need to go and look at first. And to speak about working with the DNR, the kind of the practice has been is to grant permits until there is an interference. Well, I don't know any of you who like to wake up one morning and not have water available. And so if you do a little bit of planning beforehand and just a little bit of foresight, we can try to avoid those problems. And I think that's only fair, especially to the folks who are going to be most affected by this project, when they, through every means that they had available to them, said, we're going to go and study this, we're going to put in some zoning that makes sure that we're protected, that our wells are protected, that we're protected. That was taken away from them by the city annexing property. I don't know if the city's planning to run any additional services out to this facility. I don't know if the city has actually any mines within its city limits. I don't know of many cities that actually permit mining within city limits. It's one of the things that I'm just not aware of this, especially City of Ortonville doing this particular process in the past. But the folks who live in the township most affected, who live directly adjacent to where this is proposed, have serious concerns, and they have had their rights, I think, trampled pretty substantially by having their right to go and say what happens in their community taken away from them.
Representative Lucas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I understand, I mean, it feels like a huge annexation issue to me, but there's also this issue of where the water is coming from, because my notes to myself said water from the city, water from the river. And then I look at the water use summary here, and on number two it says, at the, you know, the river will fill the wash ponds. That's half the water. And then in number three it says throughout the remaining construction season an additional 20 plus or minus 20 acre feet of water will be needed to replenish water lost to evaporation and moisture retained in the finished aggregates. What I heard in testimony, and we may have to go back and look at the tape, that half of the water was going to be coming from the city of Ortonville, and that is why I asked my question, does Ortonville have enough water since they are in a shallow aquifer? That was my basic question.
Let me go to committee members first, and then we'll try and get that. I think it was McDonald, Torkelson, McNamara. I hope that's the right order. Representative McDonald.
Since you called on me first, Madam Chair, that is the right order.
Okay.
Hey, Representative Falk.
What?
Representative, to your testimony, you said that the impetus for your amendment is that you expect a little bit of planning and a little bit of foresight to go into this.
Mm-hmm.
But as the testimony and the materials that I have, they've been planning this, the county and the city and the residents, for 6 years. And I would hardly suspect that they didn't have a little bit of planning and foresight. It seems that they had a lot of planning and a lot of foresight. And because of their planning, because of their foresight, because of the money spent, because of the expert testimonies, scientists and geologists and hydrologists conforming and giving their expert opinion, the Big Stone County Environmental Services, who is an extension of the MPCA and the DNR, you could safely say, responded by saying that your amendment is duplicative and completely unnecessary. And because of their 7 years of planning, not a little bit of planning and a little bit of foresight, the company, Santra Stratocorp, will be fully responsible to mitigate any unforeseen water issues, water supply issues, which is through current state statutes. So indicate that there's no planning, or little planning, little foresight is very disingenuous and not fair to the thousands of dollars and hundreds of hours that compiled this project.
Representative.
Madam Chair, Representative McDonald, the township put in place restrictions for a reason because they had concerns. And I know that the company says that they've been working on this project for 6 to 7 years. I take them at their word on that. But the township where it was actually supposed to be sited did not have that much time. It was actually significantly less than that. It's just really within the last couple of years. And when they were faced with this, they said, we have to get a handle on it. And the county didn't step up, and the city really had no right to because it was not within city jurisdiction. So the township exercised their authority to go and say, hold on, we need to go and study this. That's what they did. And that right was taken away from them by an annexation procedure, of which 5 out of those 6 annexations were deemed to be illegal annexations. And so now this is being permitted by the city, and the people who once again will live just outside of the city boundaries in the township, the ones most affected, they are not having their questions answered. And what I'm trying to do here is to go and at least be respectful of the fact that they have legitimate concerns, and we need to study these things. And we are having water fights all over the state. It's becoming a major issue. I'm not certain if we have the county geologic atlas completed for this area. But the point, once again, is the fact that these folks who have had to spend a significant amount of money to go and get wells because they're not served by surface water on these farm sites, on these residences, they're not served by surface water. They're not served by some type of water system. They have to have wells. And if their well goes dry because of the result of somebody else, yes, I mean, the company says that they're going to pay for it. But how quickly does that fixed? How long does a person have to go without water? Does that affect a person's livestock if they can't go and water their cattle? And so they made the decision in the township to say that we wanted to go and have a little bit of time to understand this more fully. One of the things that was specifically told to me was the impact on wells, primarily their wells. And I think that is something that we need to do. I think that's good public policy.
Madam Chair, just to follow up. Representative Falk, you know, you're right, that is very fair for the residents to ask those questions, and very respectful of the county board and the experts to at least validate and hear that. But according to the Big Stone County Environmental Services, they have answered the questions concerning the residents by saying that they're regarding the dewatering of the area to the wells due to mining. In the 18 years I have worked here, have not received one complaint of dewatering wells whatsoever. And in their expert opinion, they said they will not have any issues whatsoever. So did the residents that you speak of have any, have they seen the Big Stone 2 County Environmental Services letter to mitigate their concerns at all?
Madam Chair, Representative McDonald, I don't know. I can't speak to whether or not they have seen that. They may have. I don't know. But one of the things was we're dealing with shallow aquifers. We don't know the recharge rates. We don't know what the impacts we have. And I think it also should be maybe stated that the size of some of the current quarries, to my understanding, are a bit smaller. They're less intensive, perhaps, than this one. That's what the residents have also expressed concern about. And we don't know the impacts because we are dealing with, once again, a shallow aquifer. And as you dig down through bedrock, the water flow changes can be pretty significant. And I just don't think that, you know, the folks who actually lived in the township who decided that they wanted to go and study it, they put in place a moratorium so they would have time to go and enact proper zoning and things that would protect their homes, they had that right taken away from them. And so, if you were in that situation, if you were a resident of that township and you wanted to make sure that you weren't on the hook to replace your well or that you were, you know, taken care of, and another unit of government comes and takes away your right, you know, specifically if you were a township officer there, I think you would feel a little bit upset as well. And that's what's been expressed to me. I had 2 letters here, too, I should mention, that were just sent to me today. And one comes from a person here from 20 neighboring homeowners, and they have approximately 500 signatures of people through the township and the county who've been opposed to this. And I think it's just important that we make sure that these folks are taken care of and that the ones most closely impacted at least know whether or not they're going to have some well interference. The idea that we just go and permit things by the DNR until there is an interference probably isn't the best policy. And I'm hopeful that we'd have better data, and that's what we were trying to achieve here.
Well, Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, to those points, I have a question of Mayor Wilkie.
No, Mayor Berkner, but
that's
fine.
Berkner. Maybe I'm mistaken on Wilkie. I guess I am. Mayor, you said before that the city, the people that would be most affected are part of the city or were annexed. And I questioned at that, or I, in my head, I questioned, then does your city have a plan to run water service out to those houses that now are served by wells?
We have the capability. In fact, I made that measurement this weekend. There's 14 homes along Highway 775 that are part of the township homes that have about 50%, 60% have had some issue with this project. Half of those homes, seven of those homes, are within a half a mile of the city of Ortonville's water, last water hydrant, fire hydrant. And within 1.2 miles, we can reach all of those. A couple of years ago, state of Minnesota redid Minnesota Highway 7 as it goes through Ortonville. We had to provide temporary water connections to 100 homes over a mile, and it took less than 3 days for them to provide those emergency hookups. So it is possible to provide water in a short period of time, and if we can do the excavating and put in water line, 6-inch water line, we can actually, within about a mile, we can reach all those homes. And then also provide fire hydrants every 400 to 500 feet.
And Madam Chair, Mayor, do you have a plan for that?
I've been on the Utility and Street Committee for quite a few years, and that has been in our discussion. That, you know, this is outside of city limits. This is within township. City of Ortonville also owns our own electric utility, and we provide electrical services outside of city limits, and we do have a couple of water services outside of city limits, so this is something we could very easily add on to, and it would fit well within the capacity of our existing system.
And your million gallons a day.
We had built an overproduction plant years ago for sale to the city of South Dakota, and there's still about 300,000 gallons of capacity there.
Let me make a suggestion, because we're rapidly getting way beyond the time that I wanted to spend on this. We do have one more amendment, which is the A13 amendment, which would then be the governor's bill, I understand, which is being proposed to us, which we've had testimony on. My suggestion is that we stop this now. We go to the the person who is, Torkelson, is moving the governor's amendment. We did have testimony on that before. We discussed that, and my suggestion, I feel uncomfortable with this language being in the bill, but it came to me with it in it. My suggestion is that Representatives Wagenius, Falk, and McNamer discuss the thing that makes me uncomfortable is the story about the annexation and so forth. But if any place that doesn't belong, it's in this committee. So, we are not moving this out until Wednesday. So my suggestion is we stop this now, we go on to the A13 amendment, and hopefully the people, the author of the amendment, the author of the bill, the other legislator involved will come back with some solution for us. And Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just only one real small thing. I just wanted to clarify that I, Representative Wagenius, and Mr. LaFon are on the same page, that you absolutely are going to use no City of Ortonville water for this mining operation. You are going to use surface water.
You are absolutely correct.
Thank you.
Okay. Is that acceptable that we leave this, with the understanding that I'm probably as uncomfortable with it as you are? So let's go on to the, thank you very much. You've been very helpful. This is, I think, more information than any of us ever expected to have on this. So let's go to the Representative Torkelson. you tell us why you think the governor's bill is better than Representative Wagenius's bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I'm a great friend of the governor. Why wouldn't I help him out?
I'm so glad to see this great loyalty to our governor, too.
I respect the office, Madam Chair. We are past time already.
I know.
I don't know how much time you want, more time you want to spend. We could do this on Wednesday if you'd prefer. I don't anticipate it taking a long time, but it could take a little while.
We could possibly do it tomorrow with the parks and trails, too.
That would be fine.
We're not due to a final decision on this. Is there anyone who would like to go further on this at this point, or would you rather?
I'd actually rather wait till we're not so pressed for time, Madam Chair.
Okay. All right. Okay. Representative Rudolph, do you have any? Without objection, I'm about to adjourn this committee. Is that okay?
Madam Chair.
Is there any objection?
What time would we be meeting tomorrow?
We meet at 2:15 tomorrow. Okay. Meeting adjourned.